Welcome back to another episode of the Young Women Transform podcast. My name is Heather Risley, and I'm with USAID's Office of Education.
And my name is Lindsay Wolf with Youth Power Learning.
And today we're going to be talking more about what it means to be a youth-led program and what that looks like in practice. One of the things that really struck me was the variety of different activities that Safe Plan is offering youth and the number of different ways they can engage. And at first, this sort of felt a little bit overwhelming. It was hard to sort of understand everything that the project is doing. And it almost struck me as being maybe a little bit ambitious. But then the more I thought about it, I think there's real value in offering choice to youth when you're trying to engage a lot of different people who they all have different interests and different needs and different skills, and the ability to be able to offer different types of training, different ways of engaging and meeting people's needs in different ways, I think is a real strength of the program. And that idea of giving choice seems really important to me.
Yes, I absolutely agree. Meaningful youth engagement is of such interest to the youth development community. We've developed a community of practice for youth engagement under Youth Power Learning, where practitioners can learn best practices for youth engagement in their programming. I'll be speaking more with Annette on this topic.
All right, let's dive in. Here's Lindsay and Annette.
So to chat a little bit more about your experience as a youth leader, how did you become a youth leader within Safe Plan?
It was my dream from childhood that maybe I would wish to be a leader one time. I remember after seeing many girls not going to school, women are the ones suffering to take care of their families, then men are just... I remember telling my mother at the age of 14 that I want to be a leader one time. But by that time, I didn't know what category of leadership I would be in, what category of a leader I would be in. So growing up, I had that passion, that enthusiasm that I will one time become a leader. Then joining university, of course, it was a struggle, but I could feel that I have to. So from the university, I joined an association it was called Chambogo University Community-Based Rehabilitation Students Association. So this was an association that was advocating for equal opportunities for vulnerable youth, for vulnerable people, specifically disabled. So we did a lot of advocacy work. And with that, within that time, I saw that now I'm getting there to be a leader. Now I'm getting my leadership. So joining Safe Plan Uganda as a leader, it was through that training that I came to Masindi within that time as a community practitioner, as a community president. Then I came to learn about Safe Plan Uganda within that time. I got to know about the young people who were also doing the same thing, who are also trying to make their life better, who are trying to transform their communities. Then we joined and everything looked better. I mean, I was seeing that I'm getting my dream to be a leader. I saw it as a starting point for me. We joined the efforts and we pushed things, mobilized the young people, mobilized communities, the local government leaders, the community leaders. Much as we are not, we don't have resources, but we can do it, we can get there. Most people think that leadership is about taking political roles, political presses, but leadership, you can begin something, influence others, and make a decision to ensure that at least you achieve the goal. So joining Safe Plan Uganda as a leader, it was my long-term dream, which I realized when I was at that young age. And Safe Plan Uganda opened for me a way, and it was very much accommodative. It was very much welcoming to inspire us young people.
So now you're here at Safe Plan Uganda, which is a youth-led organization. So can you tell us what youth-led means to you and to Safe Plan?
Youth-led programming, it means as you design the programs that impact youth, to me, it is like you need to actively involve the youth in designing, in approaches. Have the context of the youth. What do the youth want? What do they miss? Then you bring them on board. Plan with them together. Know what they need. Carry out the assessments that really impact the youth. Because if you just sit on your desk and design what you think that may be good for them, they will not feel that sense of ownership of the project or the program you are bringing to youth. They will not feel the belongingness. So youth programming, that's how it means to me. Engage the youth, participate with them, bring them on the table, bring them on the board, discuss with them the issues, analyze them, and together design the approaches, design the solutions that can really improve on their livelihoods.
You touched upon it's important for sustainability purposes, for really making sure that the youth stay involved in the program. Mm. Are there other reasons that you think youth-led programming is really important?
The other reasons is that for most time, youth has been, they think that now, like at this generation, they think that having a formal education or having attained a high formal education is the way of achieving success, but it's not true. Most youth have been left behind because of those criteria that you must go to school, and some youth who do not go to school, they see them as failure. They see them, maybe they cannot make it in life, and they leave them maybe since they think that they have energy, they can go for casual labeling, they have the right to participate in other activities that can help them. So you find that the government, the local people, the community, they leave the youth behind. They focus on the middle-aged people, or looking at maybe the professionalism they have in them, what they can contribute in their fields of work. And you find that the youth who have not going too much education, who have not acquired high levels of learning, they are left behind. So it's another perspective of youth programming that I can talk about.
You mentioned the importance of role modeling and mentorship, and we discussed earlier how you recently had a mentorship activity.
Yes.
Could you tell us more about that?
The mentorship, we find it very important because youth, mostly they didn't get that space to open up their feelings, their passions. They may not open to me because I know them. They will see me tomorrow. I've been with them. But when they get these other young people, they inspire them. They come with the approaches that will tell their stories. They come with the approaches that tell their experiences, how they are how growing up, how they have reached whatever the level they are. Then these youth, the mentees who are being mentored, they see light. They see that, no, we can make it. We as we can achieve this in life. So mentorship, it is there like to open to make the youth open, have an openness, have an open interaction. And they believe that also these young people, the mentors, they have got a capacity, they have got the potential through their experiences, through what they have been doing, to make sure that at least these youth get to their track, to make sure these youth also get inspired and motivated to concentrate on what they are using to raise their efforts.
How do you identify those mentors? Who are they?
These mentors, mostly we use young people who have gone through the similar experience with these youth. I will take an example. Our instructor here who trains in carpentry, he was a refugee. Yeah, he came from Congo and he was a refugee. He got also a similar approach of the training through another organization here in Uganda. So this trainer is had that passionate also to help the fellow youth, because he went through the experience, and which looked to be more worse being a refugee in Uganda, and now you have come to this. So mostly when you could train them, then he would bring up those stories, would bring up his experiences, would bring up his examples. So that is another way of how we identify our mentors. We have to find out what is their background, what do they do, what is their achievements, what are their stories. Then we come up with the mentors because we know that they have that unique aspect of them.
Yes, that speaks to the importance of role modeling. You cannot be what you cannot see. So in what ways are the programs led by the young people that you serve? How do they provide input into the program activities?
Youth, they are the part of the programs. They are the part of the activities. And the, most of the activities that we carry out here, they are for youth. They really interest youth. And the youth, being the fact that we first have like assessments, youth assessments, community assessments. Youth also come and engage in and help us in designing and also in mobilization. Also, the youth leaders in the community find that we really they are part of the program. We engage the youth leaders. We engage the youth learners in making their choices in making their choices of what they need. And also, these youth, they have got their dreams. They really know what they want. We always have more youth interactions when we go to the community. And also, if you can look at our staff, it's more of the youth. So when they go to the community, they inspire the youth, they talk to the youth, they help, they contribute to designing our approaches. And for us as Safe Plan Uganda, we recognize the contribution of youth in development, in designing our programs.
So youth have a choice, as I understand, when they come to your skills training programs, mm-hmm. to choose what between the two activities that you offer, correct?
Mostly, yes. Youth come with choices. They come with a choice what they really want to learn. Then also, of course, Safe Plan Uganda, we also show them what we really have for them. Then it takes a time to change their mindset. Because, for example, if a youth has come with an interest of like welding and we do not offer welding, so it is a process that we shall help this youth to show him or her an opportunity in tailoring, to show her that there is an opportunity in carpentry. So that process that you bring the youth to come to love that particular activity that you offer, it is really an important lot for us. Because for them, they believe that if you don't go for what you like, then your opportunities are closed. No, there are more opportunities, and also we have more options for them that they can really engage in. And we have to assure them that we are really there to support them. It's us, Safe Plan Uganda, who really help them to embrace what we have and also help them to achieve what they really want.
We'll be right back with our interviews. Now, we want to tell the story of a group of young boys whose lives are being changed by participation in training activities that focus on carpentry. Carpentry is a skill area identified through an initial needs assessment conducted by Safe Plan early in their program. Like many of the other activities run by the organization, it complements other areas of programming. We met Gilbert, David, Joshua, and Derek, who are constructing covers for the beehives used in the Budongo Women Bee Enterprise program.
So we're looking at a couple of young boys in the community who are practicing their carpentry, and we're outside in the courtyard right now.
The small number of tools were provided through small grants, and other materials were obtained through partnerships with members in the community. The spirit of the training is to engage an initial group of youth in constructing simple products that align with market needs. The training is designed to provide quick wins, which keeps the youth more engaged.
So we're just watching them do their work.
The training itself lasts about 3 months, and the products they make only take a few weeks from the time the work begins until they are sold. The young men are also highly encouraged to recruit and train others interested in making more income through carpentry. The model not only builds practical skills in woodworking, but also encourages community building and leadership. Derek is already a leader within his peer group. He's mentoring other young men to build skills in carpentry and has been hired by a professional carpentry business just around the corner.
So right now we're watching a couple of the boys construct a wooden frame, which will eventually be the cover for the beehives that are used in the beekeeping work that the young women participate in. So this is a good example of how the training activities, or just the activities under Safe Plan Uganda, are really interconnected and support each other.
The training we give in carpentry is a basic training. They learn how to measure, how to cut, and understand the tools.
Safe Plan staff explained to us that the product ideas come from the boys themselves.
So this product is a product which is having ready market. And it's simple. It is because that timber can be bought about 1,000 or 500. Yeah. Then they get off-cut like this one. They come here, they play, and create a kind of cylindrical stick. So they cut into pieces and fix it there. That's enough sale. They fix it, brand it, then it is ready for market.
So this clothesline that he's working on was his idea because he saw a need in the community for a space so that people could hang their clothes. And so now he makes these clotheslines that are very popular and can sell in the market so he can make money.
So if a young man gets about $2 there, it's just good enough for him. If he can sell about 3 or 4 of this, about $6, that's about $30,000. He can buy soap, he can buy himself something to put on.
If these young men weren't engaged in this activity, they'd likely be sitting at home. The carpentry training is a productive alternative that responds to their interests and helps them become leaders in their community.
Then they cut and fix. Yeah, that's enough. We want two. That's enough. Cut like two.
I think this carpentry example really demonstrates Safe Plan's approach to keeping youth engaged by giving them quick wins that put a little bit of money in their pocket that keeps them engaged in the program and excited and wanting to continue. And it's also giving youth options for productive activities that are alternatives to sort of sitting at home and not doing much and contributing back to their communities. All right, now we're going to switch back to our interviews. Here's Lindsay.
Now I'm sitting down with Ronald, who's been involved with Safe Plan for quite some time, previously as a volunteer, and has recently come on as a project coordinator. Ronald, can you tell us more about why carpentry was chosen as a training?
Well, looking at the nature of the people that they are going through, and the young specifically, carpentry is one of the simple skills that you can acquire as a young person. We believe that we work on with something hands-on. So within the 3 months, we always said, these young people can begin up with simple joints, simple chairs, which can help in the kitchen, which can help in homes, which can help in maybe their bedrooms. So we thought ways that if carpentry or these people acquire these simple skills, they are income generating. They can easily bring up simple money for the young to start up with.
Can you tell me how the products are chosen that the boys decide to make?
We look at the community where we're living in, the nature of the people, how they live their life. Most of them do simple work. So if you make a chair, that is something that will be loved by most of them. If you make a simple table, definitely that person would wish to have a simple table at home. If you make a hang line, of course, most of them would wish to have something affordable, but where can look more organized in the room. So those are products these people can begin with.
Can you tell me how young people have ownership over the projects?
First of all, these young people, we encourage them to come up in a team, to own the projects, to feel that it is them who are are having these projects. It's not us, because in most cases, for the person to feel loved, for the person to feel much useful in the community, the person has to feel the sense of belonging in that person. We always plan to set up games, skills which can help these people, instead of maybe looking at them as something that can be attained or achievable at 2 years level, maybe at 3 years. Why can't we do it at 3 months so that we can see these people change their lives? So the reason why they are successful is because we do it voluntarily. We do it charity. It's a charity work. We don't want to look at how we gain, but we want to look at how a person is uplifted from down to up. So with the engagement of the community, the engagement of the government officials, we put in much time, we work hand in hand with the young ones. We run an extra mile to search down deep in the ends to find what they want and how can we help them. And also, we bring them to understand that this is their community, this is their work. It's not us who is doing them, it is you.
In that last conversation, Ronald really talked a lot about the different ways that youth are really at the forefront of the decision-making in this program and all of the different ways that youth's voices are heard in the different activities. Now we're going to hear more from Daniel about some of the challenges of this approach.
What are your main challenges as a youth-led organization that organizations which are not led by youth don't face?
I think lack of trust. Partners think that because we are youth, we don't have the capacity to manage certain level of funds. We are not yet stable. Maybe when we are given funds, we shall not account for it. So it is a bit of a limiting factor to small organizations, and more so when you mention youth-led, people look at young people. They don't know that you are also building up a system that is going to grow, and a youth will not remain a youth forever. They are also growing to be adults. So lack of trust, they also look at us in terms of we are temporarily available. They think that we still have other aspirations, and maybe one time we shall not pursue the organizational objective. So we are considered last. But yeah, above all is the issue of management and accountability.
We covered a lot in this episode. I think there were definitely some key themes that stood out across all of these interviews. One of them for me was about how, in all cases, youth are actually being engaged in the design of the activities directly, which is a core component of what it means to be a youth-led organization. In addition, and I think we really heard this in the carpentry story that we heard earlier in this episode, is the importance of quick wins. If you can show youth the payoff more quickly through the activities that you design, it seems like they're more likely to stick with the program, be more engaged, see that the programming is worth it to them. In the case of the carpentry, the staff were explaining how what it is that they were training on resulted in simple products and could be the actual skills could be learned, you know, within a few months. So not only is the training itself short, but the time it took to sell the products that they made in the end wasn't very long either. So the actual payoff of seeing income in their pocket in total didn't take very long. And I know that SafePlan pointed that out as the strength of their programming and why in many cases youth continued to stick with the program.
Another thing that I noticed was role modeling and mentorship, which are both key components of the positive youth development measurement framework, particularly under the enabling environment and healthy relationships and bonding. These are key components for positive youth development outcomes.
Next episode, we'll be focusing on the topic of women's employment. We'll be traveling to the small town of Nyantonze to learn more about what the young women there face in gaining employment. Remember, you can always learn more at the following websites, youthpower.org or educationlinks at www.edu-links.org. If you haven't already, remember to subscribe to this podcast in your favorite podcast app.